warm welcome to all of you on my show, Startup Yoga. Today we have a very special guest with us, Sulai Villappan. Sulai is a tech investor and an actuary by profession. Sulai mentors early stage tech companies and she's also an avid blog writer. Welcome to the show, Sulai. How are you?
I'm good, Bharati.
It's been so long since we did a catch up. Okay, so tell us a little bit about yourself as a kid, your upbringing, and when is it that you came to Australia?
Yeah, so I was actually born in New Zealand and my parents moved there in the early mid 80s from India. There was a shortage of doctors at the time, so that was the catalyst for them to move, and there were some personal things that happened, so they wanted to just try something different. So I was actually born in New Zealand and I lived in New Zealand until I was about seven years old. And then my parents at that time were like, oh, New Zealand's actually quite small. Maybe we should move to Australia. It's funny that it took them 7 years to come to that conclusion. So we moved to actually regional Victoria first. And so we lived there for a number of years, but my high school and university years were in Sydney. So that's what I identify as, a Sydneysider.
Awesome. So what was Sulai as a kid? What is it that she wanted to become when she became older?
Like all of us. So many things.
Yeah.
I didn't really have a fixed thing. It changed so often. Was a range from, I remember at one point, a tennis player, an artist, a lawyer. There were so many things that as a kid I just, you know, wanted to do. So the fact that I'm now like an actuary and tech investor, I don't think five-year-old me knew what any of those things were at that age.
We all end up becoming something very different from what our plans are, maybe. Not all of us, but a lot of us. So what made you actually switch your profession from being an actuary to being a tech investor now?
Yeah, it actually evolved over a period of time and years. So I actually moved away from doing traditional actuarial work, which, you know, pricing and reserving and that very technical side quite early in my career. Like I was still using my skill set, just applying it in a different way within insurance. But then there was a time when after I finished all of my actuarial exams, I guess I was looking for that next opportunity or that next challenge. And quite a few friends at the time were starting startups. And so that was, I guess, the next evolution of my career. So more I moved into the startup ecosystem first. And then once you move into the startup ecosystem, that's when you start to understand all the different stakeholders within that. Can be a founder, an operator, an advisor, an investor. There's so much within that. So it took a couple of years before, within being in the startup ecosystem as an operator, before then taking that next step for me, which was to look at the investing side.
And is there anything in specific which comes to mind? Because, you know, as an Indian background, specifically, you know, even I'm from an Indian background, since a very young age, we've been taught that, you know, a job is a very stable way of earning and, you know, the way of looking at life. But when you talk about the startup ecosystem, it can be very uncertain. One day can look very different from the other day. So anything in specific which comes to mind which made you realize that, okay, you want to be a tech investor now and be a part of the startup ecosystem?
Nothing comes to mind specifically, but I do remember when I was making that leap from working at a corporate to working for a startup. I remember discussing with my parents, and my parents were very concerned, naturally, because both of them have had jobs their whole careers, and they haven't really veered away from a different profession. And in my mother's case, she's worked at her place of employment for many, many years. She's a very loyal employee. So this idea of change was quite foreign to them. So that made them quite nervous. And so that was a really interesting conversation. But they were always very, very supportive of what I did. And it was just, I guess, giving them a bit of comfort that yes, they migrated, but they migrated to give us lots of opportunities. And we have that safety in that I have a degree, I have an actuarial qualification. It's okay, I'm not going to be homeless. Or I have the skills and the qualifications that I can do other things. So you came here so that we could take risks. Let me take those risks and it will be okay.
Awesome. So you started quite early on as a tech investor itself. Now, even today, women investors and women startup founders, they can face some challenges. And you started a few years back. So were there any challenges that you faced?
Yeah, when I first started investing, I was investing for myself. So that's, I guess, an angel investor. And what I did notice in the ecosystem about 5-6 years ago were how few women there were in the ecosystem. And so that was a little lonely, but it wasn't something that was going to stop me from doing it. It was just an observation that I made. And it's so great to see just how many more women are entering the space, both on the investing and the founding and the operating side. So it's like the more we come to the forefront, the more then we're not alone. And yeah, we just have to, I never saw it as a hindrance. I actually flipped it and went, well, I offer something different. I am different. I offer value. So it's not about doubting yourself, which is very easy to do when you look around and you're like, oh, I'm not sure if I see anyone who looks like me or I can feel comfortable with. But also, you just got to find your tribe, no matter who they are or what they look like. People don't have to have the same experience as you or look like you or be like you for you to feel comfortable as well, because we're not going to always find those situations.
When you started as an angel investor, what is it that you looked at in the companies, or generally what is the trend? How do angel investors actually look at the companies when they want to invest in them?
So I guess the difference between an angel and maybe a fund is that an angel is investing their own money, their own capital. And so it's their thesis, it's their decision, but it's also on their timescale as well. And it can be quite unique. Whereas if you're investing for a fund or on behalf of someone, you're answerable to the people who are providing that capital for you to invest. So there may be a thesis, and that may not be exactly the same as your personal thesis, but you should probably work somewhere where you have an alignment of that value in that thesis. So there's just a little bit of separate, it's a little bit separate and a little bit different, because although you're working for that fund and you have a stake in that fund, all of that capital that is available for you as an investor to invest is not, it's other people's money, like limited partners.
Got it. Okay. And in the past, and your business degree and your previous job, how did it help you in the journey to becoming a tech investor?
So with my business degree, it was, I did a Bachelor of Commerce, and I majored in actuarial studies and finance. So it was quite technical. There's a lot of data. There's a lot of information. But the skills that you really learn when you do a business degree, or in my case, also an actuarial degree and qualifications afterwards, is you're learning how to solve problems, like really complex problems, and put frameworks and systems in place in order to make decisions. And so that skill set and that toolkit of being able to make complex decisions is something that I feel that I can apply to tech. Well, not just to tech investing, you can apply it anyway. So it's, how can you apply the skills that you learn in a practical way? And then in terms of the connections as well, I suppose I've met so many different people over the course of my life, and it's been so fascinating when you have a group of people or different, like diverse thinking people as well, where you can go to them with a problem, and sometimes they'll come to you, like you'll just explain something and they'll give you an answer to a solution in a totally different way that you're like, I did not even think of that.
That is,
it's about, I suppose, widening out perspectives, because we definitely do not have individually all of the answers.
Completely agreed. You are also a startup mentor, and you do mentor a lot of women entrepreneurs as well. So what's that one thing you find common in women entrepreneurs that keeps them pursuing their dreams?
So a common theme that I see in women entrepreneurs is sometimes I see, especially at the very, very early stage, maybe at the idea stage, almost this idea of where to start or where to go or how to access the information. Sometimes there can be a little bit of this paralysis and I love being able to just nudge them in the right direction or say, hey, have a look at this, and just give them enough for that first thread for them to start pulling on, because it can seem like the startup world can seem really scary and overwhelming. Yeah. And it's like, you almost need just one entry point or one piece of information or one place to go. And then from there, that can be the start of your journey to go deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper, wherever you need to go, or to go across, or to chat to this person. Sometimes it's that first step. But I see that also amongst all founders, whether they're women or men.
And I remember, you know, reaching out to you on LinkedIn, it was a cold message without any introductions, and you were like so good and quick in responding back. And you even, you know, agreed to take a meeting, and you sort of, guided us or pointed us in the right direction. So yes, you've been an actual light.
So kind, Bharati.
Okay. So what are your thoughts on women being more planned about their finances? Because, a lot of women since, especially Indians, I would want to put it like that, have been told that, you know, let the finance be taken care of by either a male member of the family. So what are your thoughts about that? Or what is it that they should do?
Oh, I think it is so important to be autonomous and financially independent, because you just never know about the future, never know what can happen, whether your relationship breaks up, whether something happens to your partner, whether, you know, the economy changes, someone loses their job. So having that financial know-how is really important. And also having financial autonomy and freedom just enables so much more choice, right? You have so many more options that are available to you. And for example, if you do want to start a startup, like, often you need a little bit of capital, or you may not be working, you may need to pay for tech people or marketing people or something, right, to get a business off the ground, that working capital. So being financially independent and being able to understand how finances operate and what you can do just enables more choice. So it's about how much choice do you want to open up to yourselves, as opposed to, I need this money for a rainy day. Think of it from an opportunity point of view instead of a risk aversion point of view.
Got it. Okay. Now, any three key pieces of advice that you would like to give to early women investors?
Ooh, to women investors. Okay. Yeah. It would be, there's so much information out there, so you can go out and there's so much for free out there. There are so many YouTube channels and blogs, and then also you can pay very little to get to buy like some really good books as well, or perhaps pay a little bit more to do some courses. excuse me. There's so much information out there. The other thing is not to do it alone. There are quite a few, especially in the Australian ecosystem, there are, I think, Start Make First Believers, Entry Explorer Program, all these syndicates. There are ways to find out more about, if you want to go on this journey, about early stage investing. Yeah. And then the other thing I would really encourage people to do is to go and be an operator in a startup. go and work at a startup, because how can you be on the investor side if you haven't had that experience being on the inside of a company, knowing what the pain points are, knowing what the, how you hire, how you need to pivot, what happens when economic cycles happen. I think that perspective, whether you're a founder or an operator, is really helpful on the investor side.
Awesome. Okay. Now, something which keeps you motivated and going to pursue new heights in your life could be anything.
I suppose I'm an innately curious person. So that really keeps me going. And I like to fill the gaps that I have, or to have a basic understanding so that I don't feel so lost. And I've been trying to balance that with not being paralyzed about not knowing absolutely everything. But I like to ask a lot of questions, do a lot of reading, watch a lot of things, talk to different people. And so it's about, feeding my innate curiosity about certain things.
And I guess, that's the way, because a lot of people shy away from asking questions, thinking that, oh my God, what is this person going to think if I ask? But I guess, that's the key. Okay, now, one learning from your life that has helped you become the person you are today, any key life-changing moment, or even the smallest of moments that said, okay, now my life's course is going to be different?
Oh, it's difficult to think of a moment, but it's more, I suppose, something about my upbringing, in that my parents always instilled in us to work really hard, like their work ethic, and also about working really hard and being undisputedly good, because then people can't dismiss you or ignore you. And if you're, so it's almost, being so good that you cannot be ignored. But it wasn't something that my parents told me that I had to do, or made, like, they never pushed us, like, you must study all the time and you must do all of this. It was just a, hey, this is life, and this is, like, use what you've got in order to get ahead. And it's like, okay, well, and then when I was thinking about that as a child, I was fortunate in that I understood concepts very quickly. And so I could apply myself and get ahead on my intellect. So that's what I really leaned into. And so it was a, okay, you use what I've got, which is my ability to grasp concepts and to really apply them in a very quick way.
Okay. Now, you seem to be a maths guru, a numbers person. So why choose tech business for investments and not any other niche?
Well, I would say that my career is not over yet, so who knows what I will evolve into. What I really like about tech, when I started going into the understanding more about the startup ecosystem, was that tech enables scale and then impact and change and efficiency. And you look at all the things that have really transformed economies and countries and innovations and sectors, and there's generally been some kind of technology behind it. And I suppose in the last, 30 years, it's been more software. So we're in this current software, and who knows what that will evolve to in the next tech evolution. But there's something about that scalability, and it's like, wow, it can have such an impact all over the world. I guess there are good and bad things, and that you hope that you invest and are behind the good things.
Yeah. True. Okay. Now, a lot of our listeners are migrants from all over the country, from all different countries of the world. And they're here in Australia for better opportunities, and all of them have different life goals to meet. Now, what advice would you give them about pursuing their goals in a completely new country?
Yes. So This will be difficult for me to answer with a lot of authority because I guess I grew up in Australia. So I guess although I'm Indian Australian, I probably identify more as Australian. So I can only look at what my parents, what their life was like. And what was really important for them was to understand the cultural differences and cultural norms and cultural just little things. Maybe I'll give a couple of, I remember there was an example you gave me, Bharati, once about how when you came to Australia, you didn't understand what an Australian CV looks like or what is expected in this country about a CV. And so you did it in more the Indian style and how it wasn't getting you any traction. And then someone sat you down and said, hey, this is too long. And
I
this is
know.
how you structure it. And it's so more finding out about all of those norms. And then I'll give you a funny example of when I was in India recently. I think I was waiting for something and I was in line and I was really patient. And then my cousin came along and was like, this isn't Sydney. You need to like elbow in and do all of this. And it's like, so it's just adjusting to the cultural, what the cultural norms are. And that's not to say that you need to dismiss who you are, your heritage, or anything like that, but it's just being aware of, oh, okay, this gets more traction if you do certain things this way, or this is not acceptable in this kind of. So just being a bit more open-minded about those things and being really gentle with yourself about those because it will take time to understand. Whenever you move somewhere new, there's an adjustment period, right? You're not going to just slip in straight away. Like even, for example, there was a period when I was in the US for a period as well. There are different, like, although Australia and the US, both English-speaking countries, very multicultural, there are still different cultures, cultural norms there to adjust for. So if there's a really safe space that where you can ask people, hey, what's your experience in this? What can I learn from this? That I think that can go a really far way. And it's not about, I suppose it's about integration. Integrate in a way where you can feel comfortable and not feel like that you're losing a part of you.
Now, this brings me to my next question. You said that a lot of people don't give themselves a lot of time. There's adjustment period which is required. And we see a lot of people going back to their home countries because after a while they think, oh, we don't have any connections here, we don't have any resources, I'm not able to find the right kind of job which I was looking for. Any advice for those people?
Yeah, I guess if you're a student, right, you're going to a university or a college here, I'd really encourage you to get involved with the college or the university, the clubs. Generally, there are people, it's very easy to stick to someone who speaks your language, maybe your native tongue or your religion, or they're from that area. It's very easy to go into these enclaves and these little clubs where basically, it's as if you've never left the home country. You come and then you just form another thing here. And I understand those communities are super important, but they shouldn't be your sole interaction. So I'd really encourage you to speak to lots of different people from lots of different languages and countries and all sorts of things, because it's these connections that can help you to bring your own community as well, but also a way for you to learn from others' experiences. And there could be a way as well that you're able to maybe do some volunteer work in the community or just to get involved so that you don't feel isolated, because we've had a couple of years of COVID where we've all had to be at home. So is there a way that you can feel this sense of community or connection or, and it could be a whole variety of things you could. I know that there are certain programs where you can help teach tech to senior citizens at the local library, and it'll be like simple things like how to use Skype. And you as a migrant definitely know how to use Skype or WhatsApp or whatever because you're speaking to your parents or someone back in your home country. So that's kind of cool that you could be able to teach someone here in the community and it's a way to give back. There's also, I guess, community gardening projects. Maybe that's your more your thing, or just other ways to get involved, because then you can feel a sense of belonging. And I think that's, I've often heard that's a reason why people want to leave, because they haven't found their feet. There's something that isn't quite sitting right, and it's and it will be hard in the beginning, right? But then it's all about just finding your people, finding your tribe, finding different voices, right? Like there's a reason potentially that you left where you came
yeah.
from to come for a new life. Or it could be that you're coming for a period and you want to take those learnings back to your home country or to somewhere
yeah.
else. It's like, don't view it as a wasted opportunity.
Definitely. Okay. Now, how do you think it's different for, especially in students, how different is it for somebody who's been brought up here, somebody like yourself, and somebody who's coming in from outside completely as an international student? How difficult or easy it is for them, or how different is it for them?
Oh, I can't speak to the lived experience of being an international student, unfortunately, but I do remember when I was in class, I would see, I guess, two different extremes. You would see, I suppose, some students where their parents are working multiple jobs to put them through the
yeah.
university degree, and they're working really, really hard. And then I would see this other extreme where you'd see some students where they're driving the latest really expensive car, and they're
yeah.
always wearing brand new clothes, and obviously they've come from a lot of wealth. And so that I thought that was quite interesting to see the
yeah.
different perspectives. And then also a lot of the time some people really struggled with the language barrier, and so that
yeah.
was, so I think that was definitely an advantage for me, in that I learned in the school system here. And the school system here then follows on to the university system. So
yeah.
I didn't have that barrier per se of, I understood how, what would be almost expected of me potentially at the university level. So I've often seen that. And I know that there are bridging courses or ways to bridge that gap in order to feel more comfortable. And so I think that's when having a diverse group of friends really helps as well, because then you're pushing to come out of your comfort zone. Perhaps then you have to work or practice your English a lot more, and it may be that you're able to learn some colloquialisms, where I remember sometimes I would say certain things and I was like, oh, that's a very Aussie term.
Yeah. True.
And so if you're a student, you can say, hey, like, what does that mean? Or
yeah.
Because there are all these idioms, right, that certain things that people say where you're like, what does that mean? It's even like, even when I go to the UK, there are certain words or certain phrases people will say where I'm like, what did they say? I don't understand that
understand
at
that.
All. And so that goes to that cultural norm piece of where it can just take a little bit of time.
Yeah. True. Any key to take away from your student life that will help today's students and young founders to keep pursuing their goals and dreams and not give up that easily?
Definitely meet as many people as you can, because uni was a pretty fun time, although
yeah.
there were a lot of exams and it was really tough, but it was also really fun and carefree of this at the same time, of like you had all this opportunity and this future ahead of you, and you just never know around you who's going to be, who's going to help you on your journey at some point,
yeah.
right? Who's going to be that connection that helps you with a job, a supplier, a client, an investor, who knows, right? Or maybe a co-founder or a life partner. Like you just never know. So meeting people, which, and that can be difficult if you're more of an introvert, or if
right.
you're not as comfortable, or maybe English is your second language. But generally
yeah.
I find people are pretty friendly and they want to engage and want to talk. If someone really doesn't want to engage or talk, then that's all right. You move on to the next person.
Right. And I guess the world's changing a lot with all the TikToks and Instagrams of the world. Like, even though you don't know a person, you sort of know them. So, yeah, it's just changing completely over the technology. Okay, now what can students learn from your women's work documentary series?
So this goes to your point before, probably about the financial independence and autonomy.
Right.
So I was working as a researcher and statistician on this project, which was commissioned by Sydney Women's Fund and directed and produced by Ben Strum and Melissa Chan. And it's a four-part documentary looking at the life stage of a woman's financial journey. So I guess a childhood, like born and being a child, and then going to university as one, and first early jobs, and then motherhood, and then late retirement or later stage. So at all of those points, what are the, I guess, financial vulnerabilities that often happen and what the statistics are? And so from seeing, I guess that would be a really good resource just to understand the statistics and understand the areas where it's like, oh, okay, that's something to think of. Okay, when I have a kid, I need to think about maybe putting some extra superannuation away so that for the later stage, because once you understand the full picture, you can make decisions now to secure your future. They don't have to be huge decisions, but they've got to be consistent.
Got it. Okay. And any advice for our listeners who are really early stage founders and who are basically fresh out of unis, and not, who've not worked anywhere else before? Any startup advice for them?
Oh, I think it's really important to get some kind of work experience, and maybe you do that as an operator. Maybe you do that as an intern. Maybe you do that whilst you're at university, and then just to get a little bit of exposure, because that will definitely help you on that founder journey.
Okay, awesome. Now moving on to our rapid fire round, where we don't give you much time to think and you just have to say whatever comes to your mind. And I might just make up some questions randomly now that you've given me a few insights of how your work journey has been over the past few years. Now, you said you were in US for some time. So work culture-wise, US or Australia?
I didn't work in the US. I was just
Okay.
more there. But there were still cultural norms I had to get my head around.
Okay.
So maybe not that one.
Okay, my bad then. Okay, now I know you're a tech writer as well. You do write pieces of advice or, basically how you feel about certain kind of technology or tech apps, etc. Now, any recent favorite tech company or a tech app which you're obsessed with?
Ooh, should I look at my phone? I'm gonna have to look at my phone, I'm afraid, in order to do that. The weather app, I've got to say, is getting quite the
I
workout
guess in
currently.
Australia, all of us are, yeah.
But
Okay.
isn't that amazing that you can look, like, there's an app where you can look at that and sort of plan and just have a little bit of a, okay, in a couple of days' time, it's going to be really, really heavy rain.
Really?
Maybe I may need to
Yeah.
adjust some plans, or maybe I need to, take these steps in order to mitigate certain things that potentially will happen.
And especially, I guess, in Australia, you can't do without a weather app because it's like you don't know what's going to be in the next 1 hour, whether it's going to be sunny, whether it's going to be rainy. So, yeah, completely agreed. Okay, now, one app which has made your life really easy or simpler.
Oh, calendar. The calendar app. It's so basic, but basically it helps drive my life and make it much more efficient. So if it's not in my calendar, it's not going to get done. And it's also been a really great way in retrospect to go and see how I've been spending my time. And so the last couple of years, I've kind of at the end of the year done sort of an audit of, I should probably should do it more regularly, but look at how I'm spending my time. And it's like,
Time.
oh, I didn't, you know, I didn't spend as much time with this person, or I didn't do this, which really energizes me. And then I make plans in the following year to how do I do more of this that I really enjoy and do less of what I don't enjoy, because we only have limited time.
True. Okay. Now, work from home or work from office? What do you prefer?
Oh, I love working from home, I've got to say. Yeah, I
Okay.
really enjoy that. That sometimes that lack of commute or not having to commute. Yeah, that's, but I don't mind it at all. Like the occasional, okay, let me go into the office. Let me go and try a different scene. Let me go somewhere else. I'm very fortunate in that I have a really nice home setup. So it feels good. It feels like, yeah.
Now, you're an avid reader. Any three books which you would recommend to our listeners?
Oh, yes. So the first one, Guns, Germs and Steel by
Okay.
Jared Diamond, which is more of a history book, but I think there's a lot we can learn from history.
Right.
The other one that I really liked was The Life-Changing Magic of Tidying Up by Marie Kondo, which is, it
Wow.
sounds odd in that it's all about tidying, cleaning, but there's something to be said about having a clean space or having a way to organize an order, which then your mind isn't messy. It helps you to then make clean and clear decisions. That's what I really liked. And the third book I'd recommend is a book about Leonardo da Vinci by Walter Isaacson. I think that's his name, Walter Isaacson. And it's just fascinating because Leonardo da Vinci, he kind of didn't consider himself an artist. He thought of himself as an engineer and a mathematician, and like, you know, he used to pull up bodies from the and then study their anatomy. He was a very curious man, and I remember he said, "Oh, and by the way, I also paint."
Okay.
it's just incredible to read about how multifaceted his life was. So yeah, I'm very conscious that I gave three nonfiction books, but I'm just one of those people who love nonfiction.
Nonfiction, right. I was a very avid fiction reader before, but now I think I'm sort of bending towards all the nonfiction ones. So I'm going to buy all three of them and hopefully start reading soon. Thank you so much for being on our show today, Sulai. And guys, thanks for listening to us. Hope you've learned a lot from Sulai today. If there are any special requests for 2023, you can let us know in the comments or you can reach out to me personally on LinkedIn. Till I see you the next time. Thank you.